Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of the Cure Talks Cancer Podcast. Each week, we'll be hearing from patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, and healthcare professionals to do what Cure does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. Fifteen years ago, at the age of 31 and just newly married, Scott Patingo was diagnosed with early-stage testicular cancer. While he's currently free of the disease, his overtreatment of 16 rounds of radiation for his stage 1 disease left him with one less testicle, infertile, and unable to properly produce hormones. Since, Scott has become a patient advocate to help raise awareness for others by founding organizations like Think Different, Fairy Foundation, and the Center of Advocacy for Cancer of the Testes International. This week, we spoke with Scott about his journey with testicular cancer, why getting a second opinion is key, and how community can help patients and their loved ones navigate the new normal after a cancer diagnosis.
So, to just start, can you tell our readers what led to your testicular cancer diagnosis?
It's rather intimate. So, in 2004... I was diagnosed on May 3rd. The night before that, I was being intimate with my brand new wife at the time. I was married for less than 30 days. And during that process, she found a lump in my groin.
It's actually interesting that you say that, because I think with cancers like that, it's usually often people's partners that find those, you know, disease types. So why do you think it's important maybe, like, for individuals, caregivers, to be also aware of signs and symptoms, you know, or lumps, things like that?
I think a couple things, right? So over the years, we've done, several different surveys on the topic, and approximately 7% of testicular cancer patients actually found the lump when they were intimate, because I thought it was actually much higher. But I think it's twofold. I think the reason so many women should understand the disease is because of the age range at which impacts men, and that's between the ages of 15 to 40. So on the lower side, right, you have that parent-child relationship, mother to son, educating her, just like she would with a daughter, on the importance of checking herself for breast cancer. But we're no longer educating our youth in school about ailments, as well as, just sexual health in general. So I'm a huge proponent, right, to have those conversations when kids are much younger, since they're not taking place in physical ed anymore in school. And then on the older side, same thing, is because, I'd say a lot of it is due to machoism, right? It's oftentimes, we hear all the time, it's the Superman syndrome. Men believe that they're invincible, even though when they experience signs and symptoms, they stare bare through. They don't, essentially want to be labeled as weak. So oftentimes, they don't talk about what's happening to them physically, emotionally. And to have a partner to be able to have those types of conversations, I think it's extremely important.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think, I'm sorry if you said this already, how old were you during your diagnosis, or at your diagnosis?
I was basically 31 years old.
Okay. So for such a young age, I mean, obviously you probably weren't expecting to hear that news. So what ran through your head when the doctor said you have cancer?
I mean, it was so overwhelming. We sort of all plan for the future, right? And I think that's the problem a lot of times, where we are dreamers, right? We teach our kids to essentially dream, right? I always wanted the spouse, the 2.3 kids, the house with the picket fence, yard. Everything I always dreamed about, and then all of a sudden I was told that I had this disease, and the result of that could have essentially major impacts to things I've wanted and I've always, you know, dreamed about. So I think that was the hardest part. And I think anyone who's ever gotten diagnosed with a disease is the uncertainty of the not knowing, the not being in control. It was really difficult for me, you know, particularly being an alpha male. I had my orchiectomy, which is essentially the surgery to remove the testy, and then I had to wait to understand what stage I was in. And the doctor at the time prepared me for the worst. Wasn't one to essentially sugarcoat anything. So for, you know, the next week and a half, I started to think about my bucket list. And unfortunately, like being 31, just getting married, not thinking about, you know, too far into the future, right? Not thinking about death, not thinking about, well, what if I wasn't here tomorrow? Now I'm in a position where I don't have life insurance. I'm thinking about I might not live to my next birthday. And I just put my new wife in a position that anyone shouldn't have to go through. And that's A, to bury her, you know, her new husband, and to not have any life insurance money to take care of her if I wasn't here.
Definitely. And so, I know you had mentioned one aspect, but can you just briefly explain how you were treated after you were diagnosed?
Yes, absolutely. So, I had an orchiectomy, and shortly after that, I underwent 10 rounds of radiation therapy. And it turns out I was only stage one at that point in time. So I was significantly overtreated for the disease I had, mainly because I was treated in a facility that was somewhat outside of a major metro. So you're familiar with the Philadelphia region. Mm-hmm. At that time, I was living in Reading, Pennsylvania. So I was naive to the fact that I didn't understand healthcare. I was 31. I was taught to rely on the experts because I wasn't one of them. And when I walked into my first urologist, he had an Ivy League pedigree on his wall from the University of Pennsylvania. He was much older than I was, gray hair to be exact. So I just assumed because he was aged, he was knowledgeable and he knew what he was doing. And unfortunately, that wasn't anywhere close to being the truth. So I underwent, 10 rounds of radiation therapy. And that radiation therapy to this day has morphed into a bunch of other medical ailments. So I lost my fertility. So my twin daughters are actually the result of in vitro. My body stopped producing hormones naturally. So to this day, every 8 weeks I have to travel to University of Southern California in order to undergo a surgical procedure where they embed a pharmaceutical hormone pellet in my body. And lastly is with the radiation therapy, my body has had a decent amount of muscle atrophy in my upper left pectoral region. And in doing so, that has put in a ton of undue stress on my rotator cuff, my left deltoid, and my bicep. And this past summer, I just severed my rotator cuff and am going through head surgery and now going through physical therapy as we speak.
Wow. And so I know
I was going to say it's the gift that keeps on giving.
Right. So I know you had mentioned that you were severely overtreated. Maybe do you have advice for how others can advocate for themselves when it comes to visiting their doctor, or maybe even better, you know, making sure that they're getting a second opinion to kind of avoid what you've been through?
Yeah, I would say a couple things. I say one is absolutely find a mentor. And what I mean by that, there's a lot of great organizations out there. One that I'm involved in is called Immerman Angels. and they're out of Chicago, and I describe them as sort of like the match.com for cancer patients. Is they match you up with somebody who's experienced the same disease, the same demographics, so you have someone as a sounding board to discuss your disease with. Highly important, because I was blind when I was going through my treatment. And like I mentioned, I just relied on a doctor who didn't know very well the treatment. Two specifically, there's also a lot of phenomenal organizations out there that are disease-specific. And I've created one myself called cacti.org. And we focus specifically on testicular cancer. So our website has a, you know, a tremendous amount of information, not only on the disease, but also what I've realized over the years is the doctor who treats you also matters, that they are an expert in that specific field on which you need treatment in. So we sought out and we found all the doctors around the world who are the most knowledgeable when it comes to testicular cancer, and we list every single one of them on our website. And I think most importantly is, you know, it's almost twofold, is, you know, those around you, your community, is so important to your journey that you're going to essentially experience over the short term, but also the long term. And that could be, you know, everybody from a significant other, boyfriend, girlfriend, parents, siblings, amazing friends. Because even to this day is, right after I have my hormone proceed, right before and right after, I'm in a lull, mentally, physically, and emotionally. And, you know, with my new wife, so I'm remarried. So with my new wife, my employees, my friends, to have them to assist me, I couldn't ask for anything more.
So one way that I like to kind of bring this all together, looking back from when you were first diagnosed, what advice would you give your newly diagnosed self that's something that you know now you didn't know back then?
I would say the biggest thing is question everything. And, you know, it's interesting the journey I have taken over the last 15 years, and I've written about it in depth. It's, right, we all are a result of the obstacles and, right, and sort of the highs of our lives, right? Life's essentially a roller coaster, good and bad. And why, you know, you should question everything. You know, it's hard because I wouldn't have changed sort of anything to date. I am the person I am, I think for the better, for the mere fact that I struggled, and I had to be resilient and I had to have tenacity. And I'm so much better for it. And I think my children will be so much better for it when they're adults. But, you know, the problem also remains is I now live for today, right? I realize no one's guaranteed of ever waking up in the morning, right? Why we're always taught to plan for the future and to think, you know, way far in advance. I mean, if you think about it, yeah, I don't know if you have kids at all, but right, we're always asking our kids, what do they want to be when they grow up? My question is why? Right? Let them live for the moment. Don't bog them down on taking activities, overwhelmed with homework and trying to excel so they can get into college 20 years from now, because they might not be here 20 years to partake in that. And I think that's what I've learned about, you know, cancer and cancer patients. The happiest people I've ever met are people who know that they're going to die and they're going to die in the short term. And the reason they're so happy is because they have one more moment to spend with loved ones. One more moment that they get to see the sunrise. They get to kiss their kids and their spouse. And again, we forget that, right? Is I woke up today. I'm so grateful for having another opportunity to make a difference and being happy one last time.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cure Talks Cancer podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at @curemagazine.